Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Republican Chris Varonis, Democrat Dan Johnson Weinberger, Charles Lipson from the University of Chicago, and Rick Albin, political reporter from the great state of Michigan. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications, the National Radio Hall of Fame Gallery on State Street in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, btb@museum.tv. And a reminder, if you miss the show any week, you can go to our website, beyondthebeltway.com. And again, you'll be able to watch or listen to the broadcast. This past week has been another up-and-down week for the Republican candidates battling for the presidency. Much of the domination this past week has really been about Rick Santorum and his surge in national polls and in some of the key state polls that are coming forward. He's also been engaged in sort of sending the red meat to the a lot of the religious right within the Republican Party, the conservative movement, and he basically is... At least some people are interpreting that he wants to fight some sort of a religious war with Barack Obama. It's one of the things we're going to be talking about this evening. On Friday, Rick Santorum had this to say when he was talking about President Obama. I've repeatedly said I don't question the president's faith. I've repeatedly said that I believe the president's Christian. I'm talking about his worldview and the way he approaches problems in this country. I think they're different than most people do in America. That's Rick Santorum. Chris Varonis, you are a card-carrying Republican tonight in all of your appearances here. You seem to be of a more moderate conservative stripe than others who sit in that Republican chair.
I'd say more on the conservative
end. Okay,
bad.
My question then is this good for Rick Santorum just to win the Republican primary, or is this good for Rick Santorum to be offering these assessments in the general broader campaign as well?
Well, I think the issue with Rick Santorum is basically he just can't stay away from the cheese.
if cheese being the...
The cheese
that you put out there for the conservative mice to bite at.
Given the choice between partial birth abortion or radically revamping the tax code, it's obvious he'd choose the former. And I think that's his main liability. He can't temper his beliefs.
But his liability when? It's not his liability now if he's served.
I mean, in the long term, if he hopes to secure the nomination. Comments like that are divisive. I really don't know that they're all that necessary with the next big contest over the horizon with Michigan. Not really a hotbed of religious conservatives.
Charles Lipson also joins us. He is from the University of Chicago. He observes politics from all sides. What is your thought on the way in which some of the issues, at least in the last week, and by the way, we should say, reported by the national media, but the national media is also reporting on what he has to say. What's your reaction to that?
The national media is not going to change before the general election, so whatever they're reporting now is going to be the same as what he'll have to face in the general election. I would say that Chris has it exactly right, namely that this is going to be an election about Barack Obama and about the economy unless the Republican candidate makes it about something else, and that's Santorum's problem. His strength, by the way, is that he's courageous enough to say what he believes. Yeah. That's also his weakness, but his other strength is that people like him. I mean, there's a kind of friendliness about him and a personability that if Romney had, he would have clinched the nomination already.
Dan Johnson Weinberger is our card-carrying Democrat tonight. Your reaction to the way in which the last week, and again, it is a combination of the national media, which is when they think of Rick Santorum throughout this entire campaign, they thought of Rick Santorum's and his position on the social issues.
Right.
Even when they weren't being discussed, when everybody else was talking about jobs and economic issues, they always referred to him as the social conservative candidate. Now it appears that he's in a one-on-one with Romney, and he is sort of feeding the media narrative by talking about things that are of a religious nature or a religious freedom nature, and he's soaring in the polls.
Well, in the Republican primary polls, absolutely, and I think it.
But that's the name of the game now.
Absolutely, I think it is making it clearer to independents just where the base of the Republican Party is, and every week that Rick Santorum continues to tell Americans that Republicans stand for not allowing women to have birth control. And that having the evangelical view of the world imposed on the rest of us is another good week for Democrats.
Right. Chris.
Dan wishes that was reality. It'd make the election so much easier for him. Look, the base of the Republican Party doesn't like any of the above. The base is restless. The base wants fresh choices, new ideas. They don't like what they see. And that's why you see all this.
And they don't like Obamacare.
And they don't like Obamacare.
And they seize this contraceptive edict from the administration as their that breathes life into their issue of let's talk about Obamacare. Let's talk about the way in which the government is cramming this down the throats of people. And by the way, if we upset the Catholic bishops, so be it.
Well, it breathes life into a lot more than religiously minded voters. Most Americans who care about their religious freedoms, it bothers them. And I think you see that in public opinion polls.
Dan?
I think the contraceptive debate was a triumph for the Democratic Party and Barack Obama.
Polls show that most people agree
with the Obama administration's position and fewer people agree with Senator Santorum's position.
It's not true.
I think it's the more that Rick Santorum tries to drive a religious wedge between he and Governor Romney, the more he's making it clear that independents are going to be with Democrats in November.
Charles, give us your assessment of the Obama decision by Sebelius and the way they've handled it and the fallout from it.
If it's a contraceptive debate, the Democrats win. If it's a religious freedom debate, the Republicans win. And so it's no accident.
Who's defining that debate right now?
Is
Santorum trying to define it more on a contraceptive level?
That's exactly the point that that we heard earlier from Chris Voronis. He was saying that, in effect, a more disciplined candidate would have kept this completely focused on an intrusive federal government that is trampling on religious freedom. As soon as you make it about contraceptives, most Americans, including most Catholics, think that that's not something that they want to hear people preaching at them about.
Newt was trying to do the former, but again, in talking about religious freedom, that was the message he was trying to give. But again, in the political debate of this past week, it seems that the message that was coming through louder and clearer was what Santorum was saying, and it is whether it's coincidental with the week that he's surging in the polls, that's
and
what
on
we're
that
debate.
Dan is right.
We
and
have to pause. 1-800-723-8029 calls in a few moments. From Kansas City, Kansas to Kansas City, Missouri, you're listening to Beyond the Belt. Nice to have you. That's just a little short question.
Massive scope.
What coverage? What coverage?
Ireland. Coast to coast.
That covers the... Like, that covers, yeah.
From Minneapolis, Minnesota to St. Paul, Minnesota.
Yeah. East side to west side. Yeah.
From Minneapolis
to
South
Dakota. Breath of Speaking of that, let's go to calls. Let's go to Crete. John is listening to us on WLS, our flagship station. Go ahead. You're on the air, John.
Thank you for taking my call. The discussion of whether contraceptives should be discussed first or freedom of religion. I commend Santorum being a Catholic that the first issue for him is contraception. And then he reaches out to the Protestants and Jews who are concerned about religious freedom. And just to spell this out, contraception was first legalized in 65 for marriage, then for those who are single, then came, if that follows up, then you have abortion. So he runs the whole table by starting up with these death issues, so I convince Santorum for where he is.
All right, and you believe that in a national campaign where many people are out of work, the economy is sputtering, still sputtering, even though there have been some signs of life, we have problems with Iran. You still believe that that is the issue that you want to define your candidate to lead the free world?
Yeah, as I said, it's the first issue. When this health care bill came out, a few of us, and thanks be God, I did too, the whole health care bill is a reach by a tyrant. And it comes down to now the Catholic Church has its back against the wall. And so we have to start somewhere, and yes, jobs are important.
Here's the point. I agree with what you just said, because the point is whether or not the Republican candidate can make a case that this is about Obamacare and a governmental reach or overreach which touches on religious freedoms. If they can make that case, it can be very successful. But if you lead with contraception, you're going to take
why,
the direction. Dan Johnson,
exactly,
Weinberger,
look,
and then Chris.
This is... he captures the Santorum surge, the caller does. And what he's saying is, if you're a woman on the pill or you're a man that ever uses a condom, don't vote for our party. And that's the base that is surging now, the leading candidate in the Republican primary. And
Chris Baronis, look,
Rick Santorum, Charles made a good point a moment ago. I admire Santorum's earnestness as a candidate. He's got a degree of honesty that shows, I think voters respond to, but it kind of ends there. And I don't think he typifies the Republican Party any more than Dennis Kucinich defines the Democratic Party. The reality is, in a month from now, we will not be talking about this issue. And the real issue here is that the White House screwed up big time with this issue. Bill Daley advised Obama against this. Joe Biden did. Even Leon Panetta, one of the best public servants that Washington's produced, said, what are we doing with this issue?
Chris, you know
they
what?
Made a huge, huge
they
mistake
gave it
on
back
this.
To the Democrats.
But
the Republicans
I agree with you. A month from now, we will not be talking about this issue. But in October, that issue could be coming back. Because according to the national polls, let me just throw the polls in. You've given me a great segue to the polls. This is the national Republican poll at the moment. This is based on a real clear politics average with the Republican nomination. Rick Santorum has now moved into first place at 33.8%, Romney into second at 28.4%. That's a drop. Newt Gingrich at 14, Ron Paul at 12.2%. So right now, the national poll, and again, this is also holding true in some of the state polls, which we will talk about in a few moments coming up on what's happening in the state of Michigan. Again, if Rick Santorum is surging, yep, and if there isn't some place where Romney can get a foothold and stop the floodgates, Rick Santorum may be marching towards the nomination by playing this card.
Yeah.
And the people at the White House will be cheering because they will want to bring this subject back and let them define it come October.
One of the big arguments that the Republicans want to be able to make against Obama is that he's an intrusive, bossy, overreaching president. If the campaign gets down to, would you like a big, bossy, intrusive government that has Obama's values or has conservative social values of Republicans, I don't think that the Republicans win that. You may be able to win a primary that way, but you do not win a general election.
Well,
and all you have
about.
To okay, do so is look at Santorum's numbers with women to see what the problem is.
That's right. Look, Chris would like to say that Rick Santorum is irrelevant to the Republican primary electorate. But the fact is, as you mentioned, Bruce, right, the establishment wishes he was irrelevant. Because the establishment wishes there wasn't, in fact, the, for lack of a better term, evangelical or religious right or moral majority or whatever base you want to call it. But that base is large. They vote, particularly in caucuses, and they are defining the Republican Party, whether the Republican establishment likes it or not.
Yeah. I mean, step back and it was clearly Santorum's week, and it was a big win.
Big week.
Romney was caught off guard. He didn't have the ad spend that he had in previous states, certainly not Florida. And what you're looking at right now in Michigan is sort of a nuclear option, maybe more of a nuclear mandate, in that in that Romney is going to obliterate Santorum on the airwaves.
But we're going to talk about that in just a few moments, because we're going to be joined by Rick Albin, veteran political reporter from Michigan. So we will talk about that. But I want to just spend a little more focus on Santorum's presentation. I know you don't like his politics.
Yeah.
As a political commodity,
he's folksy.
Isn't he the hottest political commodity in the country at the moment?
Sure. Well,
this very moment.
Sure, because there's no interest in Democratic primaries. But look, he's authentic. He is in many ways the opposite of Romney, who is a chameleon. But at least with Santorum, he believes what he believes. You know, he believes all his ridiculous fantasies that President Obama somehow has a different theology than Christianity.
Looks good, talks good, has an interesting personal story.
And he's honest.
What do you think about that?
Santorum has an approachable kind of personality, but there's not a kind of disciplined run at the presidency. At this point now, I think he needs to focus on an affirmative message, but I'll tell you the person who has no affirmative message, really, and that's been Romney. Romney has been successful in running negative ads with a lot of money against his main opponents, but he has not made the affirmative case other than the biography and I'm a capable manager. He hasn't really sold the deal.
But when you mention, you know, his image being sold as a competent manager.
That's what he is.
But again, if you look at his management of the primary,
right?
His management of the primary campaign and his ability to react on his feet, he certainly knows how to react by pressing the button and having all the ad wars go against their opponent. Right. I mean, as Newt said, you throw $20 million in negative spots against anybody, they're not going to do well.
Right.
So he's got that part of the strategy worked out. He's got the money where people are still funding that. But what's missing is the ability to close the deal. In your view,
right?
I think I asked you this several months ago, but I'm asking you again, why has he not been able to close the deal? Is it something he's doing wrong, or what's the problem here?
Look, Bruce, some things in politics just can't be defended, and one of those is the Romney candidacy, unfortunately. I think Romney instinctively wants to play it safe, not willing to make not willing to take a risk, go long, and it shows in his presentation style. The one authentic moment I think he had, and it showed in the run-up to the Florida primary, is when he talked about his wealth. Newt Gingrich brought it up.
Yep.
Newt did have a poor night, but Romney really shined.
Yes, he did.
In being
right.
comfortable and confident and
back-to-back.
And taking the fight to Gingrich. That was very rare for Romney. I don't know if he could reproduce it. I mean, I think this week just showed a segment where he was in Michigan talking about how great the trees were and the lakes and the inlands and the cars, and it just came off incredibly awkward. So I think Romney is by
when Obama was talking about saving General Motors.
I mean, how can Mitt Romney show his face in Michigan when you oppose the most successful policy the last 50 years for the Michigan economy, when he was very clear, forget it. Don't loan the money to GM and Chrysler. Let them go down and get restructured. How do you show your face in that state to say?
Let's go to Art in Homewood, Illinois. Get a call in here. Go ahead, Art.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, listen. Women, you know, this big argument about the women and their contraceptive. The only thing I'm going to worry about in November, October, in fact, the $5 gasoline. And I don't care if you're on food stamp or you're retired.
Thank you.
$5 gasoline is going to kill that Obama. Number two. Unemployment for the 40 under 30 years old kids, young adults, it's 20% unemployment. The African Americans, it's 18% unemployment. And we're going to worry about women getting their contraceptive. This man has got to change his leadership. And that's the only thing I'll be voting for.
Are you planning on running for president?
No, sir. and then one other thing, sir. Santorum never said that women shouldn't have their. He said they sh- that should not be forced on the Catholic Church, that they should provide it for them. So let's get this argument straight.
You're exactly right that he That's said right. that in this context, but at other times he has been negative about general use of contraceptives as an ethical matter.
Yep.
So that's brought up. That's a personal issue.
And by the way, he said he would never push it as policy. That's his personal view. Which is different from obviously,
and
your
And he has voted for public right. subsidies of contraceptive services.
When we come back, we are going to be joined by Rick Albin, who keeps his pulse on Michigan politics, and we'll pick up on that discussion and take a look at Romney and Santorum and how they're facing off in Michigan when we come back from Chicago. I'm Bruce Dumont. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us tonight. Charles Lipson is here. He is a veteran political science professor from the University of Chicago and the pride of Marks, Mississippi. Chris Varonis joins us. He is the president of ASOP Communications Group, and he's our card-carrying Republican. And our card-carrying Democrat tonight is a progressive public affairs attorney, lobbyist, and your new company is called?
Equity Partner Match.
And again, five words or less, what does it do? 15 words or less.
It's a website that connects skilled people with growing companies looking to build out their team.
Very good. That's our guests in studio. Joining us now on the phone is one of the country's best political reporters. He hails from the great state of Michigan. It's Rick Albin, political reporter for WOOD-TV. That is News 8 in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Rick, nice to have you back on Beyond the Beltway.
You know, every 4 years just isn't enough, Bruce. But I do love being on.
Well, we'll have you out in the fall as well. But let's bring everybody up to date on at least the real clear politics results out of Michigan at the moment where they stand. Rick Santorum has now moved into first place, 36.5%. Mitt Romney, 30%. Ron Paul, 10.3%. And Newt Gingrich, 9.8%. So at least those are the real clear politics numbers. What, in your view, is transpiring in Michigan right now that you want to share with those listening around the country?
Well, it's an amazing scene in the last week here in Michigan. Mitt Romney came to town on Wednesday. He was in the western part of the state. I covered his event there, and then he moved to the east side of the state where he got the endorsement from Governor Snyder. That was on Thursday. But on Thursday, Rick Santorum came into the east side of the state and made a number of stops in what is essentially Romney country in that part of the state. And he actually spoke to the Oakland County Lincoln Day dinner. And Oakland County is where Mitt Romney grew up, so it was kind of a strange scenario with Ann Romney setting up the dais, the governor setting up the dais, both supporting Mitt Romney, obviously, and then the featured speaker was Rick Santorum. He was pretty well received, and some of the numbers that I'm hearing coming out of some of the counties are suggesting that he may be doing pretty well in some places, like in Macomb County, that is Santorum. But you talk about the real clear politics average. We haven't seen a new poll that has been in the field and reported since Tuesday. And that's when everything started happening here. That's when the candidates started coming. That's when about $640,000 worth of super PAC money supporting Mitt Romney went on the air. Santorum is up on the air. So is a super PAC supporting Santorum. So the candidate visits and all of the advertising are not factored in to the numbers that we see in the Real Clear Politics average. I've got a poll in the field that we will have out next week, later this week. And that's from our Epic MRA pollsters that we've used for years and years. And I'm very anxious to see what their numbers say because I know the methodology. I know how thorough they are. And I want to see exactly where this thing is because it is the last poll that's factored into that Real Clear Politics average shows Santorum up 10 points over Mitt Romney. And that's just not something you would have expected to see 3 weeks ago.
Explain to the audience sort of the geographic split. Grand Rapids is in western Michigan. Obviously, eastern Michigan includes Detroit. When do things become tell us more about other regions of the state, at least as it relates to Republican primaries. I don't think there's probably too many Republican primary voters in Detroit and that area. Are there?
Well, actually, there are, not in Detroit or Wayne County, but the two counties that surround Wayne County, Oakland and Macomb, are pretty good counties for Republicans. Okay. Oakland is probably the biggest turnout Republican county in the state in most elections. Then on the far west side, you have
Ottawa County, which is a little smaller, Kent County, which is not as Republican as Ottawa County, more conservative socially, I would guess, on the west side of the state. Pardon me.
Now, socially conservative Republican candidates over the last 20 years have generally done very well in Michigan, have they not?
Well, there is a point to which they do well, but Republicans haven't won Michigan in a general election for president since 1988. Huh. And so when you talk about the primary, yep, social conservatives do pretty well. You come back in the general when you have the whole populace to be polled, not so much. Mitt Romney won here 4 years ago because I think there were some hometown ties, and it was between he and John McCain. But as you look at it this year, you've got a pretty big split because obviously you've got Santorum, who is really staking out that conservative, that very socially conservative part of the Republican Party, and I think that's probably what's changed some of his numbers. But you've got Romney, who has a lot of money, a lot of organization. He's got a lot of ties to the state. As I say, in Oakland County, I would expect that to be Romney country, although I don't have any breakout numbers for that. But remember, too, in this state, this year, all of the congressional districts will allocate the delegates on a proportional basis. I don't want to get too far into that because it's a little confusing, and this isn't really about delegates right now. This is about momentum, at least from my perspective. But you could come in here and lose and still take away 48% of the delegates. So
but
it would be...
But insofar as losing, obviously, one of the questions that was asked on all the Sunday morning shows today would be, and again, maybe it isn't so much about delegates, but it's about momentum, as you said, or it's about image, or just it perpetuates a downward spiral for Romney. Doesn't Romney have to win in Michigan?
Well, I think he can lose and go on because he's got money and organization, and he's certainly set up well for Super Tuesday. But it's going to become the story. It's what people are going to be talking about, and he doesn't need another distraction. He, from his perspective, has already seen enough distractions. They were called Bachman and Perry and Kane and Gingrich and now Santorum. I mean, here's a guy who was trying to build in inevitability getting into this this race, and he hasn't been able to close the deal with the Republican base voters. And so now you've got the fifth other challenger who is now ahead of him in the polls nationally, leading in you know, what they like to call his home state. If he loses Michigan, it doesn't signal an end to his campaign by any means, but it certainly does create this big buzz, this big talk. Because,
let me just
finish because he told me last Wednesday when I talked to him, he said, "If I'm the nominee, I've got a good chance to carry Michigan. If I'm not the nominee, Barack Obama wins Michigan." I mean, and that's the way his camp views it. That was part of our interview. Go ahead, Bruce.
He says he has a good chance, but my recollection is that obviously you have the president talking about that, you know, the bailout of General Motors, which obviously he supported and is now touting, given the fact that they're profitable and the number one automobile manufacturer in the world again because of the government bailout, or at least a portion of it. But Romney was against the bailout, was he not?
He was, and he still is. He talks about it when he's here quite often. He says he's glad that the automakers are doing well, but he believes that they would have done equally well by finding some private equity to put into those auto companies. The president's folks will say there was no private money out there. And on that, he and Santorum are in agreement. They both, although I think Romney says that ultimately the president went through the more structured type of bankruptcy that he, Romney, had suggested, but still, they both are opposed to that. Santorum goes one step further. He vocally opposed the Wall Street bailout as well. So, but the auto thing in Michigan is big, and frankly, that plays two ways. To a conservative-based Republican primary voter, being against that bailout is probably okay.
But again,
come back
in
the general election, you know,
in the long term. As you quoted Romney, you know, he said he may win Michigan, but Michigan is likely to be in the Democratic column in the fall. Likely.
Well, I won't go so far as to say likely because we haven't seen all the pages turn on this thing. We don't know where the economy is going to be. I mean, right now in Michigan, we probably feel better than we have for a long time because we've got our unemployment level down below 10%. Now, on one hand, that's a good thing. On the other hand, it's still way too high. And if you see any of that slip backwards, from month to month pretty easily. I mean, you tell me what the unemployment rate and what gas prices are going to be on October 15th, and I'll give you a better idea of where Michigan is.
Well, that's right, especially as our last caller was talking about the gas prices. I mean, if people are arguing and looking at those gas prices in October, they'd say, maybe we shouldn't have saved the automobile industry. Then we wouldn't need so many. We wouldn't have to fill up many cars.
Wouldn't need Charles so much gas.
Charles Lipson has a question for you. He's from the University of Chicago. Go ahead.
The biggest movement in the Republican Party over the last 3 years has been the Tea Party, and I wanted to know how the various candidates are appealing to that constituency in Michigan, what their pitches are, and frankly, from your viewpoint, which seems like they're getting traction? Which of the candidates seem like they're getting traction with that crucial group?
Yeah, it is, and it's a good question, Charles. It's a little hard to answer because of their organization, and they're kind of loosely confederated and pulled together, and so you really don't know what that group of folks looks like. I mean, obviously, I think Santorum makes some headway with them when he talks about some of the economic things that he wants to do, but then when Romney comes back in and starts parsing every vote that he took when he was in the United States Senate, it paints an entirely different picture. So it's a little hard to know, and I don't get the sense that Romney is particularly cozy with those Tea Party folks either. So I really don't know the answer to that, other than to say that I know that there are people out there that are still looking, that are still hoping, and some of the people that I know that identify themselves as being in the Tea Party seem to be a little split on where they're going to go, because I think this vote coming up in a week and a couple of days is, for a lot of people, still a very undecided thing.
You said the governor is supporting Romney. Where are the other well-known elected officials and members of Congress? Where are they coming down?
The attorney general is behind Romney in a big way. He's one of his campaign chairpersons here. Obviously, both of our U.S. senators are Democrats, so they're not involved in this primary. And frankly, members of Congress that have weighed in have done it quietly, to the point that it really is not much of an issue. But I think right now that the whole idea is Mitt Romney trying to marshal all of the folks, and he's got a lot of supporters. There are a lot of people in other important roles in party, you know, the party functionaries. A lot of those are Romney.
Right.
And so he's working with them, and he's trying to put this thing together for about, 9 days from today.
Yep. Rick, we're going to pause. 1-800-723-8029. I know some of our guests here in Chicago have some questions for you, and the guests at home as well. 1-800-723-8029. One more segment about what's likely to happen in Michigan. We'll be talking about that and also some of the issues that are likely to affect voters there and in November. We're talking to Rick Albin, veteran political reporter from WOOD Television in Grand Rapids. I'm Bruce Dumont in Chicago. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us. We're talking about politics, the campaign in 2012. I'm focusing right now on the state of Michigan. A little bit later on in the broadcast, we'll also be talking about what's happening in Arizona. It is Arizona and Michigan that are next up on the political docket, a week from Tuesday. We're about 9 days away. And next Sunday night, we're going to give you a little preview look at Super Tuesday. One of the major Super Tuesday races will be in the state of Ohio, and we will be live next week from Youngstown, Ohio, WKBN. So going back to Youngstown to get the taste and feel of Mahoning County, that's next week, and Columbiana County as well. Great counties in the great state of Ohio. Chris Veronis, our Republican, has a question for Rick Albin. Go ahead, Chris.
Rick, is there anything to the chatter that Democrats will vote en masse for Rick Santorum in the primary?
I think, one. You know, it's impossible to know, but the way the system is set up here, it certainly could happen. If you go back to 2000, then-Governor Engler said he would build a firewall for George W. Bush in Michigan. And the Democratic operatives immediately went into overdrive to say, Democrats, go vote in that Republican primary to beat John Engler. They might not have had a dog in the race so much between John McCain and George Bush, but they certainly did cross over that year, and McCain won Michigan. 4 years or 8 years later, he lost to Romney. But there has always been a good deal of speculation that there was a lot of mischief, if you will, or people who were not interested in the outcome trying to change the outcome in some way. And I think that's possible. I think you could see that, although I don't know that you have the same kind of organized direction to do that. I mean, the one back in 2000 was really more about Democrats against John Engler, which had a long-running feud. And I don't know that there's any organization among Democrats to say go vote for Rick Santorum, because at some point you have to make the calculation, you know, is that a good move for us or not? And I don't know what the numbers this early on can really tell you. So you got to be careful about what you do. But I wouldn't be surprised to see something like that.
Well, Rick, I want to just get your quick thought on a conspiracy issue that was brought up here a couple of weeks ago. Because we had people when the Sebelius contraceptive directive came out of the Obama administration, there were many who were quoted, including some Democrats, including guests on the show. They were sort of stunned. They couldn't figure out why does it appear that the White House is bringing up this issue that might rile up the Catholic Church, which it obviously has. I suggested that perhaps one of the, even though when they backed up to a compromise position, which didn't seem to appease many people, that really maybe this was a setup, a Machiavellian setup, to basically trigger the Santorum response, which they anticipated that it would, and it's turned it into at least 2 weeks of discussion of that issue as opposed to issues that maybe the president doesn't really want to talk about, and that obviously the White House is maybe cheering for the Santorum surge to continue because they think in the major industrial states where the campaign will be won and lost, they will end up being the victor. Because, again, the Democrats couldn't figure out what the strategy was on that. Where do you come down on whether or not such a Machiavellian plan is real? And do you see it having the same ramifications as I've just stated?
Well, I can tell you that if there was that much thought and that much planning and that much consideration and all of those different things could be tied together, if they're really that calculating, I would have thought they would have spent that time working on the economy, not on a campaign.
But the economy is about issues. This is about winning campaigns.
Right.
They're pretty good at that.
But yeah, they have been, and I'm not ruling anything out. I suspect that the White House is more than happy enough that this Republican primary process is going to continue. By the way, you were talking about the northern industrial states. Now, you got to win two of the three. If you want to go to the White House and you're a Republican, you got to win Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Michigan. And interestingly enough, right now in all three of those states, Rick Santorum is leading. But when you do the head-to-head, obviously President Obama is leading. And so all of that does factor into it. I really don't know if they're that sophisticated, if they can be that calculating and do all of those kind of things. But the fact of the matter is, it was a ready-made issue for Rick Santorum. Mm-hmm. He took full advantage of it, and that's not all, but certainly part of why we're seeing him. I know you're going to talk about Arizona next hour. I don't want to steer your thunder, but just look at how much he's closed from February 1st to February 16th in Arizona. It is remarkable. And I don't even know if he's been there, quite frankly. He's going out on Tuesday, but it's pretty interesting.
Dan Johnson is our Democrat.
Thank you. Just briefly, earlier you said it's not about delegates, it's about momentum. And that strikes me as the same tactical mistake that Hillary Clinton made in 2008, because these elections, they are about delegates, and they are about trying to get a majority of the delegates in Tampa. And if Santorum walks away with at least, a third of the delegates, and I can't imagine – I mean, I guess my question is, can you see a scenario where Romney gets more than 55% of the vote in Michigan? And if you can't see that scenario, does anyone see a scenario where – there isn't, with proportional representation, a brokered convention in Tampa?
Well, I think it is possible, and one former Speaker of the House from Georgia is banking heavily on the fact that it will not be a settled convention. It won't be quite an open convention. I doubt that it's a brokered convention. That's quite a different thing. But you could have a situation where you don't have enough votes on that first ballot, and you might really have to see some of the mm-hmm. old-fashioned kind of politics that we really haven't seen at a Republican convention since 1976. And even then, the conclusion was probably already
I was there in Kansas City. 1976 was one of the greatest convention I was ever at. I think it even superseded 1964 for me personally. Rick, on that note, we are out of time for our first hour. Rick Albin, veteran political reporter for WOOD-TV in Michigan, saying that things are back and forth there, but Santorum has the surge, but it ain't over yet. 9 days to go. We're going to pause right now, and when we come back after network news, we're going to be talking about Arizona and continue our discussion of politics. If you're listening to us on radio, and if you're watching us on television, we'll see you next week. From Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by a panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Republican Chris Varonis, Democrat Dan Johnson, Charles Lipson from the University of Chicago, and Dan Nowicki of the Arizona Republic. Our program tonight coming to you from the Museum of Broadcast Communications, the National Radio Hall of Fame Gallery in Chicago. Toll-free lines open at 1-800-723-8289. And if you'd like to send us an email address, it's btb@museum.tv. Not an address, if you'd like to send us a note. And if you missed the show and want to see it on the web, go to beyondthebeltway.com. We're talking about presidential politics. We've been talking about the surge of Rick Santorum, and let me ask Chris Varonis, our card-carrying Republican, even though there are important races coming up, and before I ask you, let's just go over that, the Super Tuesday, which is coming up on March 6th. On Super Tuesday, let's take a look. Alaska, Idaho, North Dakota, and Wyoming, they will all be in caucus. The primaries that day, Georgia, Massachusetts, Ohio, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Vermont, and Virginia. By the way, we should mention that in the Virginia primary, Newt Gingrich is not on the ballot in Virginia. But my question to you, Mr. Republican, Chris Varonis, do you think there's, in looking at those states on Super Tuesday, is there some hope there for Newt Gingrich, and is that his only way for a comeback, or do you think this is now a two-man race?
Quite possibly. The way the Republican primaries are structured this year, by the decision of Republicans, is that they're going to be backloaded with more proportional – the delegates are going to be proportionally allocated. So a Gingrich, it actually behooves him to stay in the race. Georgia is one of the Super Tuesday primaries. It behooves him to stay in the race because it gives him more leverage to a possible brokered convention. Could that happen? Who knows? But the map favors people staying in longer toward the end. But the big advantage that Romney has over Santorum and Gingrich is money. And money is what won him Florida, and money quite possibly is what's going to win him Michigan. Right now, year to date, he has a 28-1 fundraising advantage over Santorum.
But at what point, Charles Lipson from the University of Chicago, at what point do the people who are funding the Romney campaign, at what point do they begin to waver as to whether or not they're going to put more money on that horse, especially if he were to suffer the embarrassment of losing Michigan as Rick,
I think it's
Albin
a great question.
Suggested as a possibility.
It's a great question because I think that he's got some real hard support, I think, in particular people that he's had long associations with, including the Mormon community, and I don't think that they'll back away from him easily. On the other hand, there are a lot of people who are strategic. They're strategic donors. They want to back a winner, and they want to back a Republican. on that side, just as there were people who were backing Hillary but switched over to Obama when he began to look like the strong horse. I think that there's growing distress within the Republican Party on what looks like an election that was on a silver platter, but that now looks like that platter has more than enough tarnish.
Well, it was also, I mean, not only did Romney have the inevitability going for him, but, I mean, up until some recent polls, he had the inevitability also that he was doing well in matchups against Obama, in some cases leading Obama.
Yeah.
But based on what Rick Albin said about what's happening in the state of Michigan, and that that certainly it's not an easy putt to suggest that Mitt Romney would win the general election there because of the demographics of the state. You have a situation where if Romney is the nominee, he would not likely, at least in my view, win the state of Michigan.
Right.
He's not going to win the state of Massachusetts.
Right.
He might be able to win Utah, one of his kids got like three home states.
Right.
But then you also have Santorum. It's not necessarily a lock that Santorum would win even Pennsylvania,
if he
were the nominee. Well, I wouldn't say no chance.
But
again, it's not. There's no question that Obama's going to win Illinois.
Right.
I don't think there would be any question that if Newt Gingrich were the nominee, he would win Georgia.
That's true.
But winning your home state, it speaks to the inevitability of Romney to be president.
That's right. And there isn't a state like that either Romney or Santorum can speak to. And I think to Professor Lipson's point, why are the Romney millionaires sticking with him? Well, A, he's one of their kind. But B, there's no alternative. They can't, I think, I don't think it's realistic to expect the Romney money to go back Newt Gingrich or Santorum. So who, or Ron Paul. So there's no alternative horse for the establishment Republican. They're stuck with Romney until the bitter end. And that's why I think no matter how weak he is, no matter how much the Santorum surge can embarrass the establishment in yet another state.
But they don't have to give.
Well, I mean, what else do they have? The establishment Republicans, that's what they have is money.
Bruce.
I think, also something that was said in Rick Albin's point, and he made the point about if you want to win, you've got to win two of the three of the big industrial states. You've got to win Ohio, Michigan, or Pennsylvania. You've got to figure in those. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering that
Bush didn't win either of those.
Does everybody agree though with that?
Bush only won. Bush carried one. Ohio, but he didn't get Michigan or Pennsylvania, although they are very close.
But we're just because of where Ohio lends happens to be. I mean, it seems to me that puts a lot of pressure on Governor Kasich to figure what he's going to be doing and where he goes and how that plate gets split up.
And
state gets split up.
He is, like a lot of Tea Party governors, I think their favorability ratings really took a hit when they went really hostile to organized labor in the 2011 legislative session. So I don't think Kasich has a lot of juice these days.
We've got Sharon on the line calling from Chicago. Go ahead, Sharon.
Hi, yes. I have a concern that I haven't heard mentioned yet by any of your panels.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a small subchapter S corporation in northeastern Illinois, and unfortunately, like many others, like my family's business, our net receivables have been cut by almost 60% by the recession and made worse by this current administration's policies. So the person who's going to speak to someone such as myself, I'm a conservative independent voter, is going to be bringing out the exponential huge growth in government that is regulating us out of business, taking our customers, pushing them out of the state of Illinois. Illinois is the worst, I think, out of all 50 states. And to me, as an independent conservative and as a businesswoman, our family's had this business over 30 years, I just can't see the reason for keeping Obama in office. I believe in giving people a chance, but he has completely shot himself in the foot. Now, with this religious
Sharon, let me just interject for just a moment. We're
sure.
about to go to a break. What I want to do is I want to put you on hold. Stay right where you
sure.
are. I want to let you finish, and also I want to let our guests respond to what you've had to
sure.
say. We'll do so. We're going to pause for a couple of minutes of spots, and then we'll be back. From coast to coast and border to border, taking America's political pulse, I'm Bruce Dumont. Nice to have you with us tonight. From Flagstaff, Arizona, to Littleton, Colorado, you are listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thanks very much for joining us tonight. Sharon is on the line. She's identified herself as a small businesswoman in the Chicagoland area. She had great frustration with some of the policies of the Obama administration. Our card-carrying Democrat, Dan Johnson, he's got a response to you, Sharon, but stay on the line. We'll engage you for a while.
Hi, Sharon. I think this is indicative of why Republicans are not doing well, is because there's this idea that somehow the Obama administration is overregulating people and it's causing this recession. Sharon, I'd like to ask you, what is a specific regulation that has caused your business to suffer? Because I can't imagine it's the one that requires insurance companies to pay out 85% of their premiums and claims, because that would benefit your company.
Well, let's let her respond.
Okay, I don't have any specifics right now. I'm kind of en route between my work.
Right.
What I could say is that the taxes themselves for unemployment, for covering an employee, have just been too onerous, and they're going to go up in 2014. This is the problem. And like they say, it's not only just the, as they used to say, the economy stupid, it's the Obamacare health care bill stupid.
So
because
what,
when
what,
all of
all
these
right.
little things come
Does
in,
that
I know you're
your
looking for specifics. Everything that you pay is an expense, okay? For example, I run a small janitorial maid service, and they say, oh, that's menial work. Well, I'll be more than happy to have people pay my menial taxes and insurance and vendor bills, because the bottom line is that it has always been expensive to run a business, okay? And when you start it from the ground up, it's really a proud accomplishment. But what's going to happen when Obamacare is fully implemented by 2013 and beyond? We're going to be hit with some pretty heavy taxes, and Illinois has shed quite a few businesses.
Wait a minute. So is it the small business tax credits in the Affordable Care Act that you have an objection with, Sharon?
Well, I know. Look, it's nice when you guys like to ask your spin questions. The fact of the matter, sir, is that once Obamacare goes through, small business people like myself are going to be hurt even more than we are now.
But what
many
about
of my
it?
Customers have moved. Many of my customers have moved out of the area or out of the state because it's just too onerous tax-wise in Illinois.
Chris,
Illinois has got the distinction of being the most corrupt and one of the most expensive places to do business.
This is another
myth. I'm sorry,
myth.
there's no way you could spin your way out of it.
Sharon,
I'm sorry.
Let's let Chris Veronis have his word, and then we're going to move on.
Look, Sharon's got some real legitimate points here, and I think Dan's comments are indicative of how out of touch liberal Democrats are, that they could be producing these barrels and barrels of red ink, ignoring what's happening over in Europe. We're talking about the state of Illinois that raised income taxes and corporate taxes. It's done nothing to erase the deficit. And you get politicians in this state backed into a corner by big companies threatening to leave if they don't get corporate subsidies. And what do Democratic leaders do? They cave. They cave, and they give those corporate subsidies out. Never mind that Barack Obama went for the political win and cut the payroll tax without paying for it. What about the trillions of dollars in unfunded liabilities in Social Security?
Did the Republicans
cave
on
that? They did, and they were backed in the corner on it because Barack Obama had the political
advantage. There was no profile and courage there.
Well, they didn't cave. They went along.
And so to recap, there wasn't any specific regulation or objection that Sharon raised.
What about the taxes, Dan?
What about the deficit? Here's two different things. The biggest tax cut in history came in the stimulus. There's no question about it.
Come on.
There's no question about it.
By one-time tax breaks.
Dan, I want to ask you.
That's ridiculous.
I want to bring it back to political issues that are likely to be on the table that everybody's going to be talking about come October. And I want to get everybody to kind of focus on that, picking up on something we discussed in the last hour. And that is one of the great accomplishments. If you ask a Democrat, if you ask the Obama administration, one of their great accomplishments will be, we were there, we helped the bailout. Obviously, the bailout had been started, but we helped the bailout. We saved General Motors. General Motors is now the number one automobile company in the world. And how wonderful we are. And he gave the speech last week, and everybody cheered and yelled. Yes. And he's going to carry the state of Michigan, or certainly it's a big step towards, because he'll be clearly on the opposite side of where Republicans are. But if for for the voters who look at what's happening right now, meaning October, let's say in October of this year,
yeah,
as opposed to what happened 4 years ago. I was being somewhat facetious when I said, well, okay, so we saved General Motors, and now we have gas prices at $5 or over $5 a gallon.
Yeah.
Isn't the price of gasoline going to be a much bigger political albatross around Barack Obama's neck than whether or not he saved General Motors or not?
Oh, I don't think so. I think the price of gasoline and energy policy is a big deal, and it's important. But to suggest that it's going to hurt Barack Obama, I don't buy it at
all. Why would it not hurt Barack
Obama? Because I think
doesn't he get blamed for the bad things and credit for the good things?
Yeah,
every president?
He should. He gets credit for what he does, and he gets blamed for what he doesn't do. But he has clearly a lot of environmentalists don't like it, but he has taken a lot of energy development. He has one of the most aggressive energy development policies of any administration.
Killing the Keystone Pipeline.
I think Dan is wrong.
And on the other one is
sacrificing 20,000 jobs
for things that actually matter, for giving people an alternative to paying high gas prices. Barack Obama is investing more in infrastructure and public transportation and trains than any president since Lincoln. That stuff matters to voters. Just in Michigan, we've got a train that's going at 110 miles per hour.
Nobody cares about a train if you're paying $5 a gallon.
Yeah, because then you can avoid paying those gas tickets.
I think Dan is wrong in saying that high gas prices won't hurt him. There are two reasons it would hurt. One is the reason that you said, Bruce, which is every bad thing redounds to the harm of the president and incumbents generally,
yeah,
and every good thing helps them. But the second thing is that President Obama's policies toward energy have been particularly stringent, and I think everybody recognizes that. They're now saying, Jay Carney, the White House press secretary, is now saying their policy is all of the above, but I think once a Republican is in place to try to challenge that, they'll be in a position to say, look, we're facing high gas prices for two reasons. We have not done the drilling. We don't have the pipeline. We don't have all of these things. And we have a policy in the Middle East that has not succeeded in creating a more stable region. So I think he's actually vulnerable on that issue.
Bruce, you also believe, just on the issue, because I don't want to get off this subject. We're going to be talking about Arizona politics in just a moment. But you also believe that it is likely that Israel will make a strike soon on Iran.
I think not soon, but I think that they will do so before the election, before our election. And the reason I think that is that Israel considers a nuclear Iraq to be to have a very high potential for a second Holocaust in Israel. I think that from the American point of view, we can deter Iran. I think that it would be a problem for us if they go nuclear, because I think it would lead to Turkey, Saudi Arabia, and Egypt possibly doing the same thing over time. I think it'll lead to possible proliferation. But I think for Israel, I think that this is an existential issue. And I think that if they wait, they have two problems for waiting very long. One is that they think that Iran will be passed, will be able to sort of lock in the program. And the other is that they think that if Obama is reelected and the election is passed, that he will just go hammer and thong against them.
Bruce,
your reaction.
Gas prices are a ticking time bomb,
yeah,
for the Obama administration.
So
any Democrat that tries to whistle past the graveyard is kidding themselves.
I completely
and everyone
agree.
Else.
I completely
reality
agree.
Is right now in the winter, gas prices are historically low, and for some reason they're trending up. And gas prices always go up late spring and in the summer. And overlay,
but not
that,
in the winter.
Put on top of that instability in the Middle East with a little ripple effect by Iran. Maybe closing the Strait of Hormuz, which would shoot gas prices up,
or Syria,
and the unrest in Syria
and Egypt,
and that's all on Obama.
But then you have to ask: look, no question about it, Americans are spending double their household income on gas than they did a decade ago. It's about 8.5% goes to gasoline. But the question is, what are we going to do about it? You know, it's the Obama administration that required
pipeline.
All of our automakers have to build more energy efficient cars. That happened.
What
over
about the pipeline? The other guess of
the pipeline
what about
is
the pipeline
it's
issue.
It's the biggest false solution to gas prices. This pipeline from the Canadian tar sands to the Gulf of Mexico is all to export the oil out to out, not for internal consumption. And it's just for big oil profits.
Look, do you? I want to ask you because you're a political scientist. Okay,
you think
about how these campaigns are waged. We're talking about the ability to deliver a message,
yes,
a clear message to that 12% of the people that are going to decide this election, making a case, a simple case for the folks about the pipeline. And whether you're for the pipeline or against the pipeline, or you're for drilling in Alaska or you're not drilling for Alaska, can't you make a simpler case to the voters that the Republican positions make more common sense?
No question. No question. Republic-
Isn't that what elections are about? Everything you've just said about the pipeline may be absolutely true. It's a convoluted message that I don't think you can deliver over and over and over in the heat of a presidential campaign.
And it has disadvantage of not being true.
Look.
What's the message?
No question, Republicans believe they've got a winning bumper sticker on drilling now leads somehow to lower gas prices. It doesn't happen to be true, but I'll concede they believe it is a strong October message.
Okay, on that particular note, we're going to talk about from October messages. We're going to be talking about March messages, and when we come back, we're going to be talking about what's likely to happen in the state of Arizona. They've got a primary coming up very, very soon. And we're going to talk with a veteran political reporter from Arizona when Beyond the Beltway continues from Chicago. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago talking politics. A reminder that next Sunday night, we will be live from WKBN in the great city of Youngstown, Ohio, taking the political pulse of not only Ohio, but certainly western Pennsylvania and finding out what's going on there. That's next Sunday night. That is for those who listen to our radio broadcast from 6 to 8 p.m. on WLS, our flagship station in Chicago, and stations all over the country. But again, for those watching us on television, again, we want to make sure you don't miss the radio show live from Youngstown, Ohio, the 26th of February. Now, joining us around the table this evening, Charles Lipson is here from the University of Chicago. Chris Voronis is our card-carrying Republican. He is the president of AESOP Communications. And our card-carrying Democrat is progressive lobbyist Dan Johnson. And on the phone with us now is a veteran political reporter from the Arizona Republic, Dan Nowicki. Dan, nice to have you with us.
Hey, thanks, Bruce. I appreciate it.
You are next up on the political docket, you and sharing the spotlight with what's happening in the state of Michigan. And I'd like to begin by getting sort of an assessment of what's happening in Arizona right now, politically.
Well, you know, one thing, everybody's getting ready for the big Republican debate on Wednesday, which is in Mesa, Arizona. It's the probably going to be the last debate. CNN canceled the March 1st Super Tuesday debate that they had planned. And I think there's one other one on the books for March 19th, but it's kind of questionable whether that will happen or not. So this actually could be the last, the final debate of, you know, the Republicans in their primary fight for president. We have the Arizona primary the same day as Michigan's on February 28th.
What politically right now, based on the polls in Arizona, where do things stand right now, and who has momentum in Arizona?
Well, it seems like Romney's been the long-time frontrunner in Arizona. I think his lead has shrunk recently. Santorum, you know, for months and weeks had no presence in Arizona. Since his sweep of the three states earlier this month, he's surged in Arizona as he has elsewhere in the country, but he's not hasn't caught Romney yet. The latest polls, I think, showed Romney, you know, 38-39% of the vote, and Santorum's down at 31. So he's kind of rising in Arizona, but he's still 8-9 points behind Romney. Romney has all the organization in Arizona. You know, he's got a bunch of support from some well-known Republicans, most notably Senator McCain. And he's also the only candidate who seems to be doing an early ballot strategy, for example. Arizona has a pretty liberal early voting system. So, you know, by this point, you know, there's already many thousands of Republicans who've already cast their ballot.
Now, by the way, we should mention in that Arizona poll, based on the latest Rasmussen poll, Mitt Romney at 39%, as was just stated, Rick Santorum at 31%, Newt Gingrich at 15%, and Ron Paul at 7%. You say that Santorum has not been a great presence there. Has Gingrich had any presence at all?
Gingrich has had a little bit more. He's got a state director. You know, you see some ads for Gingrich, for example. He's got an office opened here at least. So he's got kind of a rudimentary groundwork here in Arizona. Nothing to the degree of Mitt Romney. But Santorum had nothing. He had no supporters. I mean, he had supporters, but he didn't have any kind of high-profile endorsements in Arizona. He had no staff here. And he's now he's got like one Arizona grassroots coordinator, and she's only been around for, you know, a week or so.
Where is former Congressman Hayward, who challenged John McCain, a big leader of the conservative movement out there? Where has he come down in this race?
Congressman Hayward actually has taken a very low profile. His name had come up as a possible Senate candidate, but he took such a beating in 2010 when he challenged McCain. I mean, he really just got carpet bombed. McCain had money to burn, and he used almost all of it just to hammer Hayward. And he's kind of dropped out. His name had come up as a possible Senate candidate because we have John Kyle retiring as well.
And
briefly,
also,
but he's last I heard of Hayworth, I guess to answer your question is he's got a radio show in San Francisco and he's kind of staying out of the Arizona politics.
Yeah, that may be good for him at this particular moment.
Right.
There was also a little chaos in the Romney campaign in the state. One of his co-chairs, a popular sheriff out there, has run himself into the front pages in a sort of a scandalous way. Bring everybody up to date on that story, and does that have any political significance as to what might happen on Tuesday?
Right. Well, I guess the timing isn't great for Romney with the Arizona primary approaching so quickly, but Pinal County Sheriff Paul Babu, who, you know, listeners will probably remember if they know him at all, he was in the famous McCain 2010 campaign ad where they're walking along the border, and you know, McCain memorably says, you know, we need to complete the dinged fence, and you know, Babu is the sheriff who's with him, who says, you know, Senator, you're one of us. And it was an important ad because, as we alluded to earlier, Hayworth was attacking McCain hard from the, you know, that kind of that anti-illegal immigration right. You know, they were attacking McCain as too soft on illegal immigration, and Babu kind of helped McCain shore up his support. You know,
say, but he's now,
you're one of us. You're a border security.
He's hung
guy
up
too.
In his sex scandal now.
Right.
Of
yeah.
Some
and so exactly. What happened is on Saturday he had a press conference in which he did disclose that he is gay. There had been, you know, rumors and whispers about that previously, but it had not been, you know, publicly acknowledged.
And he's running for Congress.
Right. He's also running for Congress. Right. In a kind of a very Republican district. One of those districts where whoever wins the Republican primary is going to be a shoo-in. You know,
but also the issue was that his partner, there's a claim that there was an extortion attempt. Is there any evidence other than he said?
Well, it was broken by the Phoenix New Times, which is, you know, kind of a liberal-leaning alternative weekly newspaper. And they printed photos of, you know, listeners who remember the Christopher Lee scandal of last year. It was almost an identical photo that's of the sheriff of him, you know, posing shirtless in front of the mirror, taking a picture of himself with his, you know, cell phone camera. And I guess the story that came out was that a former boyfriend of the sheriff is alleging that he was threatened by the sheriff and the sheriff's attorney that with deportation or the possibility of being deported, he didn't agree to sign a non-disclosure agreement about the relationship. So
So again, it's not likely to affect too many people voting, because again, it's allegations against one person who used to be a co-chair of the Romney campaign. It'll be pretty far away from probably people who are deciding. When we look at
I don't think it's going to hurt Romney.
No, when we look at Arizona politics from afar, and we do our show from Chicago, when we think of Arizona politics, we think of the illegal immigration issue. Where do the candidates stands on illegal immigration? How much are they in tune with Republican primary voters? And is there much difference between the Romney and Santorum issues? We know there's a difference with the Gingrich issue, but are Santorum and Romney fairly close on that issue?
I think so. I think Mitt Romney actually is probably the most far right on immigration, which is actually kind of interesting in Arizona. As you mentioned, you know, folks from the East Coast look at Arizona, and I don't think they necessarily see how complicated the issue is here. And a lot of these you know, anti-immigration fire breathers, guys like J.D. Hayworth, really don't wind up doing very well. It's much more complicated than that. I think a lot of Arizonans, even Republicans, are looking for, like, solutions to the problem and not just, you know.
Where's Jan Brewer coming down on it?
Well, actually, Jan Brewer is we could talk an hour about her positions on immigration, but generally she was initially viewed as kind of a more moderate Republican on immigration. She signed SB 1070, and that kind
but
of
on the presidential.
Threw her into the
who
whole,
who was she
yeah.
for in the presidential?
She's not endorsed. She's waiting for to see this debate in Mesa. She actually was very instrumental in securing this debate for Arizona.
Oh, neat.
And she says she wants to wait to see everybody. I think she's going to try to meet with people today, too.
What about Joe Arpaio of Maricopa County is one of the most popular and at least certainly well-known sheriffs. Talk about hard on the issue of illegal immigration. Now, he had endorsed Rick Perry. Has he weighed in, and would his endorsement be viewed as a plus in a Republican primary?
Well, everyone seems to think so. I know that he's certainly being courted by just about every candidate. I know before he wound up settling on Rick Perry, Herman Cain met with him. Michelle Bachmann really made in a public way appealed, wanted his endorsement. He spoke with Gingrich last week. Gingrich called him, wants his endorsement. He actually was Mitt Romney's honorary campaign chairman for Arizona in 2008, but he seems to have cooled on Romney.
Charles Lipson from the University of Chicago has a question for you, Dan.
Hi, Dan.
When I was looking at the numbers showing Santorum above 30%, I was struck by the fact that, gee, if he has no organization at all.
Yeah, that's totally organic. Yeah.
That's a pretty high number. But I want to ask a question about the kind of conservatism that there is in Arizona. I've always thought that the conservatives in the southeast of America were more of a strong kind of Christian conservative, and out in the southwest there was a stronger libertarian streak. And I was wondering if that's still true, and if so, whether that might hurt Santorum in some way.
Well, no, I think that's a very astute observation. You know, obviously, you know, Barry Goldwater was the kind of the epitome of, you know, what they call Goldwater Republicanism out here in Arizona, and there is very much a strong libertarian strain in Arizona. I think you do see that reflected in a lot of Arizona.
Will that hurt politics. Santorum?
I think he does not have a natural base here of kind of evangelical Christian right. Arizona is not that sort of state.
Right. Listen, thanks very much, Dan Nowicki, who's a national political reporter for the Arizona Republic, bringing us up to date on what is likely to happen in Arizona. And in one word at the moment, who do you think give an edge to somebody if you want to do it? So, Dan, one word, who is it going to be?
In the presidential?
Yeah.
I say Romney.
Romney. Okay, that's the word from Arizona at the moment. Voters will decide on Tuesday. Back shortly from Chicago. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago, and during the break we were talking about a Saturday Night Live skit that was on last evening in which African-Americans were discussing whether or not there's anything that Barack Obama would do that would cause them not to vote for him. And you were
and I was like,
you were
it was
finding
a funny,
great humor in that. Basically,
I found humor in it, and I because it was, of course, deeply true. That is, they're really committed, and for understandable reasons. But what I think and I don't even think that the issues about will there be enthusiasm turn out, he'll get a huge vote from the African-American community. I think that the question about the enthusiasm, though, in groups like younger voters, college-age kids, will you take off a semester from college to work for them? I don't see that there here in the same way it was in 2008.
I wonder from 2008 till now,
yeah.
Caller pointed out a moment ago, 18% unemployment among African Americans, a president who's been no show on guest worker, his support among Latinos, Latino voters has plummeted.
That's true.
These are serious liabilities, and with trampling over religious liberties, Obama either tied or barely won the Catholic vote and swing votes. So these are real issues for Barack
Obama.
They
all were before it became clear what the Republicans are offering up. And now
it's not, what are the Republicans offering?
I want to go back to just spend the remaining – we have a caller which we'll take in a moment. But the issue of looking to November.
Yeah.
Do you believe, Chris Varonis, do you believe that Rick Santorum can be elected president?
No.
Do you?
No.
Do you?
No. 45% tops is the
vote. Because? Give me in one sentence because.
Because you cannot win a majority of the vote if social issues are the main way that voters identify you.
That's right.
His message need to be jobs, and by choice, he's not picking that message.
But does he have the ability? It is a long time between now and
Of course he does.
August, when the nomination, the convention is held.
Well,
does he have the? But here's my point. Does he have to do it? And let me sort of broaden the question. Because the issue of contraceptives can be massaged to be an attack on religious freedom and on the Catholic Church, it can be positioned that way. And since so many of the large swing states of America have large urban areas with large Catholic voters, many of whom are Hispanic, does he have the ability to communicate if he can focus on his message? Does he have the ability to perhaps get more juices flowing that would support him than the opposition? We know the opposition is going to be out there trying to paint him as, you know, Attila the Hun. But my point is, to this 12% of the people who are not politically necessarily astute, but their votes count, can those people be maneuvered, manipulated, and got to by a message led by the messenger, Rick Santorum?
The problem with that strategy is that most of those 12% are probably using birth control. And when you poll people and you ask, if you want to make it about religious
freedom, that's if the campaign is about that. So you're saying the Obama campaign will put all of their effort and all of their money into making that message?
No. I'm saying if the question was, can we somehow Latino Catholics, can Rick Santorum get them because of trying to spin some story that the Obama administration is trampling on religious freedom because they're requiring insurance companies to cover contraceptives?
That's not a
I don't. No, they can't because
that's the story.
Because the Catholic bishops, they're okay with the compromise.
They're not.
Many of them are.
No. And
but more importantly,
Catholic bishops are not,
okay with that.
But most of, more importantly, when you poll, most Catholics are okay with the compromise.
If it is conceived as a as a birth control issue, it the Republicans lose. If it is conceived as a religious freedom issue, the Obama administration loses.
Kevin in Caldwell, Idaho, listening to us on KBOI, you've got a question or a comment for Dan Johnson. Go ahead.
Oh, I do have a comment, but, you know, I've got to say one thing real quick on that last segment. That fellow, I couldn't believe the amount of time spent talking about that, you know, the sheriff coming out of the closet. I mean, if that's if that's where we spend talking about this presidential election, I guess we're going to, you know, we're bound to make Greece look like rulers once again.
Sir, that's why we cut the segment off, but go ahead.
Thank you. I appreciate that very much. You got a good show. Hey, what I called in about on Dan, you know, it's very hard for us as callers to make sense. I mean, I already got my heart pumping and high blood pressure. You know, it makes us nervous out here. But the thing is as small business people, we are being regulated out of existence, and I blame both parties for it. And I think, you know, we don't have Republicans who stand up for anything and do anything. They just kind of go along. And you say regulations don't hurt. And I'll name some regulations if you'd like.
Please do.
Okay. Drilling. For one, he put regulations on the Gulf and all that that's cut back on drilling. Now our production's starting to drop, which causes us to be more dependent upon the Middle East, therefore allowing speculators to drive the price up. I don't think that there's a real demand problem right now, but the speculators are sure having a ball with Wall Street. Fuel prices are about to rise, and we're just about ready to put our tractors in the field. You know how much that's going to cost us out here?
So
probably hundreds of thousands of dollars for a family farm.
So it sounds like you'd like some regulations to clamp down on the speculators.
I'd like to keep going on these regulations, if you'll allow me.
Sure.
Tell him about the dust regulations. Tell Dan about the regulations that had to be pulled off about dust.
Sir, do me a favor. Would you do me a favor? We're about to go off the air. We're out of time, but I want you to do me a favor. I want you to stay on the line. We're going to put you on hold. I'm going to ask our producer to put you on hold, and I want to talk to you off the air. Don't go away, even though we're saying farewell to Charles Lipson and to Dan Johnson and to Chris Varonis. For being with us on our broadcast this evening. I want to continue this conversation with you off the air, so don't go away. This program is a Gen B production produced in association with WLS Talk Radio in Chicago, and our thanks to Dan Dorfman and Tom Veracruz and Khalil Palil for their assistance in the production of this program. I'm Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.